The meaning of all kinds of cultural traditions can get lost in translation. Reporter Ari Daniel Shapiro unearthed the story behind one in this report on holiday foods in the Haitian community.
9 years ago, on New Year's Day, David Gunther was faced with a mini epidemic. He's a family doctor, and at his old job in Somerville, just north of Boston, many of his patients were from Haiti.
10 or 12 patients all complained of pretty similar symptoms, belly pains. They weren't terribly ill, but it was clear that there was some kind of a pattern.
Gunther almost alerted the Department of Public Health to this mild GI outbreak. But then one of those patients with the stomach trouble figured out what was going on.
And she explained that most likely they were all suffering from the same problem, stomach upset related to eating too much of a holiday soup.
So nothing infectious, just a squash soup overdose.
Yeah, we eat a lot of it.
That's Marie Romulus.
I'm from Haiti.
In her cozy kitchen in Somerville, she pulls out a hefty stainless steel pot. In 2 days, it'll be brimming with her squash soup.
Or in Creole, they call it soup jomo.
During France's rule of Haiti, this soup was off limits to the slaves.
Because we were in slavery, so the commander never let the slave have the soup. The soup was considered superior. The slaves were considered as a little lower class. So when we get our independence, we were free to have a soup.
Haiti gained its independence on January 1st, 1804, so Haitians eat soup jomu every New Year's Day. It's orange, and it's a mix of squash, potatoes, and meat. Romulus likes to add some spaghetti to hers.
It's really energetic, like it's a combination of everything. If you taste it, you will like it also.
Romulus eats the soup 4 times on New Year's Day, and that's not as often as some. She thinks that overeating may have caused the GI outbreak at the clinic 9 years ago.
You have to space yourself not to eat everything at once, you know?
So when you eat it, what does it make you think about?
Whenever I eat it, I always think about my great grandfather. They used to be in slavery, so I feel like I am free. And when you have the soup, you really feel full.
Full of freedom. For NPR News, I'm Ari Daniel Shapiro.
This is NPR News. The economic problems in Europe and the United States have young, highly trained workers from those places looking for opportunities elsewhere. One country that's been luring them is Brazil. Foreign fortune hunters say there's plenty of opportunity in Brazil, even if the country is finally feeling the ill effects of the global economic downturn. NPR's Juan Ferreiro has the story.
David Bailey has a talent for music. Playing piano as he and his roommates prepare for a party in Rio de Janeiro. They're all foreigners from France, Switzerland, Spain, and all of them are here for work. Bailey's 28 and from the UK, and aside from the piano, he has a talent for business. But he decided to leave London, where many of his friends are jobless, and come here to Brazil. Bailey says Brazil's fun, sunny, and has a strong culture of music.
And then on the other hand, it's a place where, it's one of the few places actually where the economy is growing. And there are significant opportunities.
He's raised the capital and is now starting up a website to take advantage of Brazilians' growing fondness for ordering out. Diners will peruse menus online and place their order, common in the U.S., but not here in Rio.
Well, you know what? The market is actually really big. Instead of people using the telephone to make their orders, they're going to use the internet increasingly more.
As Brazil's economy grew in recent years, work authorizations for foreigners rose fast, and the unemployment rate is 6%, with companies finding it hard filling top-end jobs, from engineers to financial experts to executives. Manolo Ferreres from economically troubled Spain says people from his country know it all too well.
There's a clear lack of qualified people between 30 years old and 40 years old. And you can see that because there's no unemployment for that profile of professionals. There's no unemployment. And the complete opposite situation is what's happening in Spain. The complete opposite.
John Murray is an American who's been here nearly 50 years. The manager of the executive headhunting firm Boyden, Murray knows better than most what expatriate workers dream of.
A&P cares about coffee, every single bean. So we keep the richness of our 100% Brazilian 8 o'clock coffee nature sealed.
In 1963, he came here to export coffee for A&P. He remembers arriving on a cargo ship. He recalls hand-cranked phones and an economy that was coffee-based. It was an uncertain land of opportunity then, and he says there are still problems, like Brazil's notorious red tape. But Murray also says Brazil's been transformed.
Things are still happening here. There is a feeling, especially for a young executive, that he can come down here, either starting with a job and eventually becoming an entrepreneur. Many times they don't see the negatives, which are also here, but right now Brazil just looks very, very rosy.
John Rosenthal, formerly an up-and-comer on Wall Street, acknowledges that the economy is suddenly flat because of the global downturn. But the 31-year-old New Yorker also knows that the 4% growth the government is forecasting for 2012 is still good by European standards. On a recent day, he relaxed with coffee just off Faria Lima, the Wall Street of Sao Paulo, the country's economic engine. Rosenthal explains that he had to be here, a city where he could learn about the fast-growing companies on Brazil's stock exchange. It was vital for his startup, a hedge fund called Newfoundland Capital Management.
These developed world cities are static relative to what we're seeing around here in Brazil. The investment opportunities here, the overall morale of the investment community here definitely inspires a lot of excitement and confidence.
He says it's like living at a time when Rome is being built. Juan Ferrero, NPR News.
You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News. In eastern Oregon, Native American tribes are holding their traditional New Year ceremonies, which begin at the time of the winter solstice. Anna King of the Northwest News Network visited the Umatilla tribe and has this report on the ceremony, which welcomes the year's new foods.
Armin Minthorn is the spiritual leader of the tribes that live on the Umatilla Reservation on the dry side of Oregon. The celebration is called Kimti Inuit.
This goes back to when the world was new. And the first food that was created was the salmon we call Natsoch.
Minthorn explains that the Indian New Year is the time to celebrate the return of the sacred foods.
The second food was the deer, and we call the deer Nukt.
These foods will come back to the Indian people as the sunlight hours begin to stretch again.
The third is the bitterroot we call Sliton.
To honor these sacred foods, the tribe sings, drums, dances, prays, and shares a meal together at the longhouse. In the community kitchen, some elder women prepare meat stew and Indian fry bread. Lin Sue Jones is tiny with a soft, round face. She kneads a mass of tacky bread dough to a loose rhythm.
We can be able to face our demons and take care of our health a little bit better, and I'm glad I'll be able to see another year to begin with.
Lin Sue Jones is 62. She is taking on new responsibilities this year, raising two granddaughters, 3 and 5.
I just want to ask the Creator to give me the strength to do right by them. You know, I want to teach them the longhouse way.
The tribe's children sing to the elders during the community meal. Lin Sue Jones's sister, Linda Jones, listens nearby as she stretches small balls of dough. She flattens each one, then floats them in sizzling oil. Tribal elder Linda Jones teaches younger women and girls how to gather the traditional foods for the tribes. Every year she goes out to the mountains and bluffs to harvest the wild celery, bitterroots, and huckleberries. Jones says the foods are sacred because they nourish the people, but also...
when our elders pass on and go back to the ground, this is how they come back to take care of us in these foods.
Some of Linda's long, long hair is silver. She worries not enough young people are living the tribe's traditions. Sometimes she has to gather the sacred foods alone.
Everything is passed by word of mouth, and that's how we were brought up, and that's how we do things to whoever will listen. It ends up coming down to that, who's going to listen.
Jones hopes to kindle enough interest in the ancestors' teachings so the Umatilla tribes have enough hands to bring in the sacred foods this year and in the years to come. For NPR News, I'm Anna King in Mission, Oregon.